Good evening. I see we have another nice crowd. How many people are here for the first time tonight? See, I keep getting all these new people, so it seems like there's always the same amount, but either I'm scaring some off and then some new people come, so it's just the same crowd. So, okay, those of you that tonight's your first night, how many of you this is your first experience with Buddhism completely? Okay, welcome. Just checking it out? Okay. My name is Sandy Carlson, and you're at the Kadampa Center, which is a Buddhist center in the Gelupa tradition. This is session 3 of Buddhism in a Nutshell. But don't worry about it. We'll do review. We'll catch up. We're going to be talking about some more concepts. So people kind of come in and out as they choose with this. But the first thing I'd like to do is I'd like to just settle our minds a little bit with a brief meditation. I find that this actually helps me probably more than it is for you, because I tend to get a little bit busy and scattered during the day. And so I'd like to just kind of just stop, just take a breath. For those of you that have not done meditation before, let's walk through some of the 7-point meditation posture that this posture has been developed by Buddhist meditators over the last 2,500 years, and it's a very base posture that helps you hold a position for a long period of time. So there's nothing holy about this. It's very much just basic meditation posture that will help you to stabilize your position. So if you're sitting in a chair, sit a little bit forward on the chair so that you're not leaning back. All right. If you're on a cushion, sit comfortably. Sometimes it helps to go to a little bit to the front of the cushion, and you can sit in the lotus position, the half lotus position, whatever really you're comfortable with right now. The legs, the first point is your legs, to have your legs just stable on the floor. If you're sitting on a chair, you might want a cushion beneath your feet. That helps you be a little bit more stable, and sometimes the floor can be a little bit cold as well. So it's just getting very comfortable, your legs in whatever position that's going to work for you. Your arms are folded, kind of held loosely, a little bit out, and we do the right hand on the left. This is kind of the Buddhist position, the right hand on the left with the thumb slightly touching, held just a few inches below your navel. If that's not comfortable for you, feel free to just leave your hands loosely on your knees. But the one, if you could try it, just to at least experiment. And again, it's a little bit of a regal position. Your back is very important. So your back needs to be straight, but not stiff. We kind of call it a regal position. So shoulders back, and this kind of opens your chest and allows the breathing to be. Your arms are slightly akimbo from your body, and again, it's nothing holy. This allows airflow to pass. Okay? The eyes, in the beginning, it may be helpful for you to close your eyes, or if you are able to, just leave your eyes slightly open, but not focused on anything, just a few feet in front. And the reason that we recommend that slightly open, if you keep them closed, that can make you drowsy. And if they are too open, then you can get distracted. So just slightly open, gazing just a few feet in front of you. Your jaw and your mouth are not clenched. Don't clench your teeth, okay? Just relax slightly, teeth lightly apart, and your lips slightly touching. Your tongue should rest lightly on your upper palate behind your teeth. And again, what we're talking about, these are things that will help you hold a meditation posture. This helps for saliva, okay? There's actually very mundane reasons for all of these. Your head should be slightly inclined forward. Come on in, you're okay. Okay, so your head is slightly inclined forward. Again, not totally drooping so that you get tired, but not straight up, because then you have that view and you can be distracted. And one of my personal things that works for me is I tend to think of a string that I can pull at the top, and it just tends to pull me up a little bit. So, and that's the meditation's posture, that it's just good to get very, very comfortable with that. We're going to do a meditation tonight. It's called the Bare Attention Exercise. All right? So just take a couple of deep breaths and just relax into this position. Okay, find a quiet place and ensure that you will not be disturbed. Find your comfortable seat, cushion with your back straight, and just focus your attention on your breathing. Breathe naturally. Okay, use one of the breathing meditations that we've learned. Okay, we did the counting the breaths. So just do that for just a few minutes. If you're new, all we do is count the breaths up to 10. When you breathe in, that counts as 1. So breathe in and breathe out. That's 1. Breathe in, breathe out. That's 2. So count up to 10. When you reach 10, start over again. I'm just going to leave you with that for a few minutes. What we're doing is just settling the mind so we can bring it to a state of deeper focus and concentration, kind of readying our mind to engage in meditation. And the first thing that we do is we set a motivation. We create an altruistic motivation for this meditation session. So think that you are meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be a benefit to all beings. So start first by focusing your attention at the opening of your nostrils. Pay attention to the very subtle sensations as you breathe in and out through your nose. You can feel certain sensations as the air passes. The small hairs move, cooler sensations as you inhale, warmer as you exhale. Don't follow the air into your body or out into the surrounding environment. Just place your attention on the sensations associated with the breath at the opening of your nostrils. Think of yourself as a gatekeeper, just watching that breath flow past as it enters and exits the body. Keenly observing everything that arises in just this area of focus. In the beginning, if you find it helpful for concentration, you can mentally note in and out with each inhalation and exhalation. Use the breath as an anchor for your attention. If your mind is especially scattered and distracted, place even more emphasis in your meditation on the element of concentration, focusing your mind more firmly on your breath, in and out. Distractions are normal. Your attention may be distracted by a thought or by a sound or sensation in your body, itching or pain. And as soon as you wake up to this and realize that you're thinking about something else, simply take note, such as I'm thinking, or sensation. Don't get upset or disturbed. Don't judge. Just very gently disengage from that thought and return your attention to the breath. In, out, in, out. When you gain a deeper level of concentration and focus, then you can loosen your concentration slightly and place greater emphasis on the element of mindfulness in your meditation, allowing your mind to be attentive and observant of whatever comes to notice, regardless of what it is. You don't identify with the mental elements arising, you simply observe them, like a tourist. Allow them to arise as you observe them and pass away without getting involved. Just be aware. As you gain greater mastery over this kind of meditation, each time the mind wanders from the breath, just begin to note specifically how and where it's wandered. Thoughts of the past, what's happening today, what you're thinking or even fantasizing about, what's going to happen when you're done with class today. What kind of thoughts tend to attract your mind? And what does this indicate about the delusions that play a role in your life? This is a good meditation to do for, you know, 5-10 minutes and then take a break, do it again. But throughout the day, just stop and check whether or not you're being mindful. Are you always aware of what you're doing while you're doing it? Are you thinking about what happened earlier in the day or later in the day? So just check up throughout the day and see where your mind is at. Now dedicate all the positive energy you've created through this practice of mindful meditation to becoming a better and better person who's more at peace in life, who can bring more peace and well-being to others in every moment of every day. Okay, bring your attention back to the room. Now, for those of you that have been here, is anybody trying to meditate during the off weeks, during the off days that we're not here? Are you trying it? How's that working for you? Let's get the other mic. I didn't even think about that. For those of you that are new, we use a second mic when we're asking questions and stuff. And the main reason for that, listen to that. The main reason that we're doing that is because we record these classes. So if anybody misses a class, you can actually later, Chris Baranski, who is our wonderful audio visual volunteer, actually records these, and he places this these recordings on the computer out in the lobby, and we're also going online for our members-only area. But that way people can refer to these, go back, check up other classes and stuff. But if we don't use the second mic, all they can hear is me, and then this is blank, and they don't know what we're responding to, so we try to use the mic in between. Okay, so you guys are trying to meditate? How's this working for you? Have you been meditating before this class?
Trying.
Is it getting easier, better, harder?
Well, I have two dogs, two
okay.
tiny little dogs, so I almost have to, like, put them away mm-hmm. or, 'cause the first time I tried doing it with them outside of their kennel, I mean, he literally was like, 'cause I'm on the floor in my room, and so that's a distraction that I was trying not to pay attention to, but... Mm-hmm. As long as I keep them up, I can do it in short periods of time, not anything
okay.
long, but I try to do it like before I'll go to work, just to kind of get myself together before I go to the hectic.
Are you using the meditations that we did the past,
couple,
or are you doing?
Been, I tried the one that we did last week where you kind of like sense the different parts of your
scanning
body.
Scanning the body.
And then the ones from Sunday.
Oh, okay, with Geshe-la, the 9-point breathing.
Yeah.
Okay. The meditations that we're doing in this class, we put them up online on the Kadampa Center website. So any of the handouts and things, you can go on the Kadampa Center website, kadampa-center.org, go under Spiritual Programs and Buddhism in a Nutshell, and you'll find these PDFs there. So these are actual meditations that we use for this class, and feel free to download them, print them off, and try them. Okay, so how's it going for you?
It's definitely getting easier. I've set aside a whole room to keep away from my dogs mm-hmm. and cats, but it's definitely getting easier. I did a little basic stuff during my lunch period at work, but now I'm getting more into it at home so I can go to work prepared and that kind of thing. So.
Do you find it is a little helpful when you're at work?
It's super helpful. It clears my mind of everything, and I'm usually really good about leaving problems from work at work,
mm-hmm.
But this helps me during work to clear my head and focus on what I'm doing and becoming a better person. So.
Okay, good. Now, you were the one that was like 3 minutes a day, right?
Even though, like, I come to Kadampa every Sunday and I did the meditation class, like, I hated it. And I don't know what happened, but something clicked for me. And now I'm, like, wanting to do
it. Isn't that awesome?
So I still can't do it for very long, but.
Doesn't have to be long.
I find I can get in the zone, like, almost immediately. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
You'll find. Yeah, I've been meditating for a long time, and I just want to make sure that I put this out there so that you don't get frustrated. There will be times that you may cycle a little bit. There's times that, you know, I try to meditate every day, sometimes more often, maybe, you know, a couple of different sessions and stuff. And sometimes I can get in that zone, you know, for months, and I love it. I can totally be there for an hour. And then there are just some times where I'm grinding my teeth to try to just sit through it. So you will cycle through it. And during those times that it just doesn't seem to be working, just keep trying, even if it's just that 3 minutes. I have specific practices that I do. But I will find that if I get away from it, I definitely can tell for me. And then when I do get back to it, it's just like going, it's just like coming home. I don't know how to explain that any other way. So just give yourself a break. Cut yourself some slack. Don't force it, you know, except for a little bit, because it will work. But, just know that can come and go. I'm really pleased that it's clicking for you. You guys remember any set intentions and motivations? Because that's important. We're going to talk about that a little bit more today. Are there any other questions that came up during the week about last week's class? Because we're going to go through a review. I just want to make sure that we don't have any specific questions. Nope. All right. Here we go. We're going to cover some big concepts and some big topics in between that auspicious thunder. Okay? My mother-in-law called, Sandy, there's tornadoes in North Carolina. And I said, I've got a beautiful sunny sky. Here we go. Okay. Today we're going to cover some really large topics, so I'm really going to try to keep it down to just a couple of things. And I want to preface this by saying this is Buddhism in a nutshell. This is Buddhism 101, so we're not going to do a bunch of deep diving here, okay? And you're not going to learn everything in this hour and a half session. These are little teaser concepts, okay? We're going to be talking about some big ones. Don't expect that you're going to leave here tonight and you're going to understand everything about rebirth. Don't expect that you're going to leave here tonight and you're going to understand everything about karma. These are concepts that take years of study, okay? All we're going to be able to do is just touch on these topics, all right? Now, the biggest thing that the Buddha always said and that all of us say is that check it out, okay? Don't believe what we're saying just because we're saying it. It is up to you to look further into this, okay? We're going to give you these concepts, but you check it out and do with it what you will. All right? So we're just going to cover some basics. And if there's something that you really don't understand, you know, follow up and ask questions. You know, I can point some books that can explain things so much better than I can. We also have access to Geshe's and these other teachers that really know. So if we go too deep or we have problems explaining things, follow up. So a lot of you guys are coming on Sundays. There's a little piece of paper out there that are questions for Geshe-la. Feel free to write it out there and get the answer straight from him. He's going to be able to answer these things so much better than I can. All right? If there's things that you're just not sure about, when I first started with all of this stuff, I created a mental bookshelf. All right? And it's like these concepts, some of these I don't really get, I don't understand. I just put it on the bookshelf because I'm just not sure about them. Okay, I'm not going to toss it out because we just make these snap judgments about things. Okay, just set it aside for a little bit. And over the years, there's been many things that have come off that bookshelf later. Oh, that's what that meant. Okay, so create that mental bookshelf for you guys and then look at it later. Okay, if there's something that you really don't understand or just aren't too sure about. Okay, let's do our quick review just to get everybody back up to speed. What we covered for the first two sessions is we covered who the Buddha was. He was born as Prince Siddhartha Gautama 2,500 years ago in India. okay? He was born to a king who wanted to keep him very safe and very sheltered. There was a seer that had done what they call a casting at the time and said, you're either going to be a great king or you're going to be a great holy man. Okay, well, the king, his father, wanted him to become a great king, follow in his footsteps. So he kept him very sheltered. Okay, but as he became older, he became more curious about things, and he snuck out from the castle one day with some buddies. You know, this is one of those things that boys do, girls too. And he saw four sights. Anybody remember what those four sights were? A sick person? Old man? Dead person? And a monk. Very good. Okay. Those things really bothered him. They really disturbed him. And when it was explained to him that this is what life was, that this was going to happen to everybody, he could not let that go. All right. So later, when he became older, he left the palace and he went off and he started studying with all of the different monks and wise men in India. All right. And he would go through all of their teachings because he was very sharp, okay? He was very quick learner, everything. So he did it, but he was never finding the answers that he wanted. So then he met up with five different monks that were also having these same quests. And they, this is a train that goes by, so we just practice patience, okay? They took it to the extremes, okay? You've all seen those pictures of the Buddha where you can see every rib, okay? They were meditating and just giving up everything, okay? And they actually were down to, like, there's stories of one grain of rice while they were trying to meditate. And one time, Prince Gautama became so sick and ill that he couldn't even meditate, okay? He was lying by a river. That's when he saw the boat going by, and he saw this musician stringing a guitar. I'm sure it was a lute, okay? And he realized that if the string is too loose, you can't play it, and if it's too tight, you can't play it. So the two extremes just don't work, okay? And they had gone, he had lived a life of too much luxury where nothing was, everything was given to him, and then he went too far with the asceticism, so this is where the middle way, okay? So that he had, there was a young woman that fed him, got him back to strength, and that's when he went and he sat down under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, India, and he looked at his mind, okay? And he went through all of the things about suffering, unhappiness, illness, death, all of these things. He just looked at his mind. And at that point, he became enlightened. After many, many years, he became enlightened. Who remembers the definition of enlightenment? Full awakening. Okay, to perfect all of the virtuous states of mind and to remove all of the obstacles. Okay? Buddha means enlightened one. Shakyamuni Buddha is who he became. Shakya is the clan name. Shakya, Muni means sage. So that's where Shakyamuni Buddha, that's where he got his name. Okay, enlightenment means full awakening, removing all obscurations, all negative states of mind, and fully developing all virtuous, positive states of mind. Okay, what are some of those negative states of mind? What's a negative state of mind? Jealousy. Anger. Impatience. Self-hatred. These are all negative. Okay, these are all negative states of mind. What are the positive states of mind? Kindness, patience, joy, compassion, love. Okay, so you perfect, fully develop all virtuous states of mind and remove all obstacles, all of these negatives. That's what enlightenment means. This is the Buddhist definition of enlightenment. So that's what we're trying to do. All right? Now, since the Buddha was a man, he's not a god, he was a man, so he couldn't just reach out and just take all of this and fix everybody. He doesn't have those powers, okay? He's a man. So he did the next best thing. He taught. So he is teaching us how he did it. So that's what we're doing. He's teaching us how he became enlightened. So all of his teachings, we call them the turning of the wheel of Dharma. Okay, so these are, I'm going to just again, familiarize you with some of these terms and these definitions that you hear in Buddhism. Okay? So he's a teacher. We call his teachings the turning of the wheel of Dharma, the first turning, second turning. Okay? There are 84,000 teachings, the sutras. All of these little boxes that are up here, these are the teachings. Now, these are in Sanskrit, Tibetan, actually, so I can't read them, but Geshe and Geshe Sangpo, our teachers, can. Okay, but those are the teachings. The first teaching that he did was the Four Noble Truths. Okay, this is the very first turning of the wheel, the Four Noble Truths. The truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and truth of the path. Okay? So, we talked about these. I'm going to go through this a little fast because we've got a lot of things to talk about. But what was the word that we used instead of suffering? Do you guys remember talking about that? Because suffering, from a Western point of view, we just think, you know, pain. Suffering, we always go to the deep end. It's awful. Okay? Do you guys remember the word that we decided to use instead of suffering? Dukkha. Very good. Like I said, I want to familiarize yourself with this, because if you go out there and you start Googling, you're going to come across all these words and you're going to think, oh, what does that mean? Okay? Dukkha is now one of the things, since Buddhism is becoming so prevalent in the West now, one of the, it's not an issue, but one of the things we have to be very careful about is this translation into different languages. Okay, and some of the translations, some of the language that they use in India, in Pali, and over in Tibet, okay, they just don't translate to Western words very well. So we want to be very clear about the definitions that we're using so that the understanding is there. Okay, when we say truth of suffering, what comes to mind for us? Pain. Okay, so that is one type of suffering in the truth of suffering. There's three kinds. Okay. Three kinds of suffering or dukkha. There's the suffering of pain. That's the one that we all know. Life, death, getting sick, breaking bones. The suffering of change. Okay. And the pervasive compounded suffering. Suffering of change. I bought a new car. I went out and somebody crashed into it in the parking lot. My car is no longer what it was. That's suffering of change. I love chocolate cake. The first piece, even the second piece I love. The third piece is awful, okay? So you start to get sick. So there's that suffering of change. The pervasive compounding, we are never satisfied. Pervasive suffering. We always build our minds into these, that's a good way to put it. It's that today was a good day. Today was a really hot day. Okay, so I go outside and I'm warm, but I get too warm, and then I come back inside and I'm too cold because of the air conditioner. You see what I'm saying? It's not really suffering, and not the way we think about it, but it's this that constant ebb and flow of things we're not really happy with. Does this make sense? It's just kind of that everyday, not really happy. Am I explaining this well? Because you will have some good ones. The mic. Scott's really good. Scott's one of the other Buddhism in a Nutshell teachers, so I like for him to speak up sometimes.
The example you were giving about going outside and being hot, or you're outside and you're hot, so then you go back inside and you cool off in the air conditioning, but then you're in the air conditioning for too long, you start to feel cold,
yes.
So you want to change the air conditioning. I hear a lot of teachers discuss that as the suffering of change.
Change.
It's because Venerable George Chernoff, when he was here, gave a really good...
get to sit with them.
He gave a really good explanation of, you know, it's like you're at the beach and you're really, really hot sitting there on the sand. So the suffering of heat is very high. And then you go into the water and you start to cool off. And as soon as you go in the water, the suffering of heat is decreasing and the suffering of cold is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel good as long as the suffering of heat is going down and the suffering of cold isn't getting too high. But when that suffering of heat is very low and then the suffering of cold is much higher, then all of a sudden you're cold. So it's this constant back and forth ebb and flow is the suffering of change. And the suffering, the all-pervasive suffering is a really, really subtle, intricate one. It basically has to do with the fact of just our existence, our actual, you know, everything to do with our existence is in the nature of suffering. The fact that we have these bodies that
right.
need food, that grow old, that wear out. It's just the very nature of our existence is in the nature of suffering. So that's a really subtle one. That I don't even, you know, claim to have a really good handle on that.
No, but that was a better explanation than mine was. Okay, so the truth of the cause. Truth of suffering, truth of the cause of suffering, truth of the cessation of suffering. We can get this to stop, and the truth of the path. So we went through all of these last time. What we didn't talk about at all, and what we're only going to skim over today, is the path, the truth of the path. Who remembers what the book or what the path actually is? What's the book that we said was describing this path? The Lamrim. Okay. In Tibetan Buddhism, okay, which is what we're going to focus on because we're part of the Gelupa tradition. There was a monk many, many years ago that wrote out the path that we need to do. It's a step-by-step guide on how to achieve enlightenment. It's Buddhism for Dummies 101. It's the very first one that was ever written, okay? And it's the Lamrim, all right? Let's see where we had it in here. Am I cutting ahead? I might be a little bit. Okay, well, we'll get to that. Back to that in a second. Okay, so he wrote out this Lamrim. This is the exact path. These are the steps we have to take. It's not, it is very easy to do. Okay, it's there. It's all written out. It's very simple steps, but it's, what's a good way to say this? It's very simple to do, but it's not easy is the better way to say it. It's all there. But we have to actually do it. And we talked about this when we said, you know what, you took 4 years of high school, 4 years of college, okay, we're not going to do this in 5 weeks here for an hour-long session. This is an everyday thing. And we're talking about the 4 years it took to get that college degree. We're talking about enlightenment here. It can take lifetimes, okay? So it's that commitment to be working on our minds, okay? From the Buddhist point of view, everything is about the mind. Everything that we're doing is about our mind. Everything that you see here, all of these books up here, all of these teachings up here, all of these paintings and statues and colors and flags and prayer flags, it's all about our mind. Everything is about our mind because from the Buddhist point of view, that's all we have to work with. Okay? We talked about the spread of Buddhism from India to all throughout Southeast Asia, Japan, Tibet. There's many different Buddhist traditions, all right? But there's two main strains, the Hinayana and the Mahayana, all right? And there is the Vajrayana, but that kind of blends into the two of them, all right? The Hinayana is the individual release from suffering, which is what Nirvana is. The Mahayana is the universal vehicle. Yana means vehicle. Again, I just want to get you familiar with some of these terms as you start to look at them. Okay, we are in the Gelupa tradition, which is the Mahayana Buddhism. Okay, there's four Tibetan schools. You don't need to know them. Sakya, Nyingma, Gelug, Kagyu. All right. The Dalai Lama is in the Gelug tradition. He's in our tradition, but he's also over. He's kind of the unofficial leader of all of them, okay? But he's given up the political leadership of Tibet. That is now in, there's a, somebody dinging? There is a democratic process for the Tibet leaders in exile now. So we have a different political leader. And Lama Yeshe, Lama Zopa Rinpoche are the founders of the FPMT, which is our parent organization. That's a picture of Lama Yeshe right back over there. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche is right there with the Dalai Lama. Lama Zopa Rinpoche will be coming here to visit next year. And actually, fingers crossed, many prayers, the Dalai Lama might be coming too. I'm just putting it out there. Stay tuned. Geshe Gelug Choda is our residence instructor here. He is Geshe is a, that means that's his title. It's like a doctorate. Okay? Gelug Choda is his name. Geshe is his title. And he's also, not only is he a Geshe who's done 30-plus years of study on this, he's also a Larampa Geshe, which means he is, it's kind of like summa cum laude. Okay? Kadampa Center. Kadampa is a name that means those who put the teachings of the Buddha into practice. So that's a very auspicious name for us to have. So again, I'm just kind of running through a quick review here. Okay, Buddhism is about your mind. Everything is about the mind. Developing positive states of mind and removing the negative states of mind. What did that mean? Enlightenment. Okay, this is what we're doing. Now the mind, here's where we're going to get into some stuff. Mind, the Buddhist term for mind, the definition is non-physical. The mind is not the brain. Okay, from a Buddhist point of view, the mind is not the brain. The mind is non-physical. It is clear. Okay, clear like the sky. You know, there's no clouds or anything in there. It's just that clear mind. It is aware. Okay, you know how we talk about sight, sound, smell, touch, and taste as those awarenesses that we have? From a Buddhist point of view, you also add mental consciousness to that. So sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, and mental. Okay? So it's aware. Its function is to know. That's what the mind does. It knows things. Okay? And there's no beginning and no end. That's the Buddhist definition of mind. We kind of tend to use the word consciousness as mind. Okay? That's okay. All right. So, mind. Non-physical, clear, aware, no beginning, no end. All right, I'm going to skip over that one because I want to stay with the mind. Okay, everything has a cause. And because the mind is non-physical, it can only be produced by something non-physical. Okay, every moment of mind is produced by a previous moment of mind. This gets into that continuity of consciousness. This is where reincarnation comes in. All right, now I've been trying to think about a good way to do this. And I think I've got it. Okay, here we are now, right? This is right now. How many can remember what they had for lunch today? Remember what you had for lunch? Let's say this is lunch. How about breakfast? Anybody remember what they had for breakfast? Okay. Okay, let's just go that this was, what, 6 hours ago? Think about the moments that took you, okay? So this is about 6 hours. And here's lunch, noon. Okay, so all of the moments, this was hours, 6 hours ago, right? You remembered that. Okay, here's now. Okay, what time is it? Okay, it's 7:40. Let's just go from 7 p.m. when you first got here. Okay, that was, let's just pretend it was an hour ago. Okay, think about all the things you did in between now and an hour ago. Okay, that's 1 hour. How many minutes are in an hour? 60. Okay, so you have 60 minutes in an hour, right? Okay, now let's go into 1 minute. Now, 1 minute ago. This is all going to come together in a second, I promise. Okay, so there's 60 seconds. Okay, 60 seconds in a minute. From a Buddhist definition, there are 64 mental moments in a snap of a finger. Every second, 64 mental moments. Boom. 64. Okay? 64, 64, 64, 64 mental moments. Just like that. We're not aware of that. I barely remember what I had for lunch. Okay? I barely remember what I had for dinner. I don't think I had dinner. Okay? But all of this time, all of this continuity of time. Okay? So from now, think about you have gone through, I'm 53 years old. I've had 53 years. And I can remember about this much of it. These are my mental moments, okay? Think about how much time we just waste that we don't even know about, we don't remember, okay? This is mental. This is that continuity of consciousness that we're talking about, okay? So we remember just these fractions. Your mind is not aware of all of these, okay? We have three levels of mind. The gross, this is what we know, the gross level. This is what we experience. This is what we would actually call consciousness, right? That we're aware of every day. We're aware of sitting here. We're aware of talking. You know, you might be thinking about, boy, what am I going to do after this? Okay, we're aware of this. There's subtle. Okay, this you can kind of think of that as your subconscious. Okay, this is that, you know that there's something going on, you know that there's something you should be thinking about, or that kind of, oh, that's right, I need to do that, that kind of thing that's always going on, that's your subtle consciousness. Okay, and then there's the very subtle. This is your very subtle. This, very subtle, this is what we're not aware of. This is actually that peace of mind, that peace of consciousness that goes through life to life to life to life. Okay? This very subtle consciousness that we're not, this is that clear mind that we're talking about. This is that pure, clear mind that we're talking about, okay, that can go on. This is what your Buddha nature is. This is the part that we're saying that this can become, once we take all of those obscurations off, this is what we have. Okay? Am I losing you? You're just sitting back there smiling, I know. Okay? But see how we're talking about time, this continuity of time, and to break it down, now expand it out. Okay, now expand it out. Now go, okay, from birth, because we were talking about it's beginningless and it's endless. Life, this is your death. Okay, so this is your life, this is your death. Then you start, now, let's get clear about this one too. It's just that clear consciousness, that very, very subtle consciousness. Sandy does not go with. Sandy is not going to be born again with all of Sandy's quirks, foibles, you know, humor, bad things. This, Sandy does not continue life after life after life. It's just that clear consciousness that is part of Sandy that will be going on. Okay? A good way to think about it, the analogy that I've heard you use, Scott, that I really like, is you know how environmentalists always talk about being the keepers of the world and we have to take care of it so we can pass it on to the people coming after us and our children? Okay, right now, that's a good way to think about it, that I'm the gatekeeper of this consciousness. So I have the ability to affect and to take care of this consciousness, and I want to do the best I can with it so that when I pass this consciousness off to the next keeper, that I'm giving them a good start, okay? So I'm just the keeper of this consciousness while it's here with me, okay? That's a really good way to kind of think about this. Helping? Lost you? Questions? The mic. We haven't even gotten into karma yet.
I was just wondering if there's a complete kind of disconnect between the very subtle and the gross or subtle, or if the gross and the subtle were to be stripped away, if the very subtle remembers everything from past lives or moving forward, or like everything that you forget about in the day-to-day, is it all-encompassing, that kind of thing? Or
ask that question again. Say it again, because I've got two questions in my mind there.
Does the very subtle consciousness remember everything that the gross and the subtle doesn't necessarily remember?
I'm going to say yes with a caveat.
Okay.
Okay? Because once you remember everything and you know everything, what does that mean? then you'd be enlightened, right?
Right.
Okay. So the very subtle, this does not mean, this has the potential to become enlightened, but this is not enlightened to where they would know everything. That makes sense, Scott?
Yes.
Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
I always want to check on these things.
I would want to also because, I don't really feel like, you know, I would be qualified to go into a lot of detail about exactly how the very subtle level of consciousness works. That would be a question for somebody who's done a lot more studying, somebody like Geshe Gelug, who's studied for, you know, a couple decades all the actual Buddhist psychology and study of the mind. But what we talk about, which I think Sandy's going to get into in a minute, is how the very subtle level of consciousness carries karmic imprints,
mm-hmm.
and how everything that we do leaves imprints on our very subtle level of consciousness. So all these levels of consciousness are working at the same time. They're all functioning, but most of what we're aware of on a day-to-day basis is just that gross level of consciousness. We're not really connected with the more subtle levels, but that is part of what our goal is in meditation, is to be able to connect with those more subtle levels of consciousness so we're able to utilize those capabilities, if that helps.
That help? Other questions?
Do you have a...
Okay. So, we're good with this, right? Somewhat. Again, you're not going to get it all tonight. This is that teaser course, okay? Just to help you to understand reincarnation. Let's talk about, from a Buddhist point of view, the difference between this and that concept of a soul. Okay, just to be clear about this, because Buddhism is a non-theistic, mind science or philosophy, okay? There isn't to Buddhists, there's not a creator out there. Buddha was not a creator. So the concept of a soul, where there is that little essence of Sandy that would just go on, okay, we don't have that. Again, Sandy is just the keeper of this consciousness, okay? So this consciousness, when it goes on, will not be Sandy. Okay? So does that kind of clear about that? And again, in The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama, he explains it so well, and it's such a more fuller explanation. So I think that from a Western point of view, to really understand that, that's a book I would really recommend, because that it has a much fuller explanation. Because again, we're talking about these concepts and these translations that don't quite work through the Western language as well as they can. Yes, ma'am.
So what part of the consciousness is the part that gets reincarnated?
This very subtle.
But is that supposed to be like memories, or is it just, what is...
It is that clear... It's not memories, it's none of those things, okay? It's that clear mind, let's sign that one. It's this most subtlest little clear mind that will go, okay, there's no memory.
That's regardless of whether or not the person was enlightened or not, that part that gets reincarnated is the same. It's just the potential of what you do with it when you're the keeper of it.
Say that again.
I don't know if I can.
When you're enlightened, okay, when you have cleared everything out, okay, you've cleared all of the negative out, so you've completely removed all obstacles, and you have completely perfected all of these virtuous, okay, then you have more control over this rebirth, okay? We're going to talk about all this because this comes through. You're starting to touch on karma, just a little hint of it there.
Okay.
Yes. Because these concepts, they really are intertwined, okay? And I think once we start talking about karma, you'll see how some of the stuff comes together a little bit. Some of these concepts, they're very tied together. They're very interdependent, okay? But it's just, we're going to be talking about all this stuff, so we got to start somewhere. Yes, ma'am.
So this may be totally out of the realm of this class, but does the very subtle consciousness move on even, despite the death of the body? Like like if you're in a vegetative state or something, it'll go ahead and move on, or
not until the death.
The death of the body has to be
involved. Okay. Because they are interdependent. And again, so much of Buddhism is about interdependence. And once we start to wrap our minds around that and allow for that a little bit more, it makes a lot of this fall together a little bit easier. But the death of the body has to happen before that clear consciousness is released.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
If you reach enlightenment, say somebody became a Buddha, would they be a Buddha in the next life? I mean, I know you said it would affect where they go, but or
yes.
Once you
have become a Buddha, once you have become enlightened, there's no going back.
Ruby.
You will always be enlightened. Because I asked that question specifically. Absolutely.
Thank you. I think something that helps is, and you have to keep in mind that, you know, we don't really have like textbook scientific definitions of this stuff. You know, even if you talk to a neurologist, talking to a physicist about the way the mind works, the science still doesn't have a complete explanation for everything that we experience as consciousness. Right? They can talk about how different thought patterns relate to different activity in the brain, but they can't explain to you exactly what it is that we experience as consciousness, what that is and how it's created. So a lot of what we use are these metaphors and these images and these comparisons, and they really serve well because they get you thinking about these things that we don't have specific technical language for. So one of the really good explanations or the metaphors is when we talk about the mind, picture the mind itself as a lake, a totally calm, flat lake, like a mirror. And a lot of things are, that's what the actual mind is. When we talk about the mind being clear, that's what we mean, absolutely clear, perfect, reflective lake. And all these different things are reflected on that lake, like clouds or like, the trees and the things around the lake. So those are like our thoughts. And everything that we experience as ourselves, this gross level of consciousness that we experience, all these thoughts, these memories, these feelings that we have, are just like clouds reflected on that flat lake. So they're there, but they're not actually part of the lake. They're separate from it. And this is one of the reasons this gets into the cessation of suffering, because all those negative thoughts that we have, all those negative emotions, they're there like reflections on that lake. Because they're not part of the lake, they can be removed. So most of what we experience, what we think is ourselves, what we think of as what we are just those thoughts, those feelings, those reflections. And that's all the gross level of consciousness. Then we have this very subtle level that's the actual mirror itself, the actual lake itself. And that's what carries on from one life to another. That's what has no beginning. That's what has no end. These clouds on the surface of the lake, these reflections, they arise and then they're there for a while and then they disappear. And that's what we experience as ourselves. You know, what we talk about is our minds, our consciousness, our life, our memories are just those things that arise for a while and then are gone, while that lake continues. Okay. So that may be a little bit of imagery that hopefully helps with that a little bit.
Questions? Yes.
Actually, that imagery confused me. Because what I'm hearing you say is once you're... Well, even that's confusing because there's no you. There's only a reflection. There's a reflection and there's a clear lake. And how can that clear lake, if there's no you or something, it's really hard to even talk about.
Yeah.
How can that reincarnate if it isn't really but reflection? I don't understand why it's being incarnated if there isn't something.
Okay. Part of what you're talking about is that the reflection is the what's not really there or is dependent on something. But Scott's analogy is more that the mind is like the lake, okay? And he's using the analogy of that lake when it's just that smooth, crystal, flat surface and everything's reflecting, okay? That all of the things that are reflected on the lake, the trees, the clouds, the birds flying over, anything that's reflected in the lake, that's the analogy for those are your thoughts, the anger, or the all of the jealousies or all of the negative emotions. They're not part of the lake. They're just being reflected.
So there's a lot of lakes
out there.
There's
a lot of lakes out there. Okay? There's a lot of lakes. Your mind is a lake. My mind is a lake. That's the analogy. Another one I like to use, too, is the clear blue sky. There's two meditations, but I'm going to try to pull them out. In fact, I may try to pull one of them out since we're talking about this. That the clear blue sky, so this North Carolina blue sky, when there's not a cloud in it, okay, it's just, you can just look up and that's all you see, okay? Just picture your mind, that's your mind, that's all your mind is. And that when thoughts come, the thoughts are just like clouds and they'll go away. And you just let the clouds come and you let them go. You don't get attached to them and you don't follow the story. Oh, what am I going to have for lunch today? Let it go. I'm just the clear blue sky. You know, oh, I've got to take care of that project. Let it go. So the clouds can come and go. Or I got frustrated at the cable guy today. We won't even go there. Let him go. Okay? So that is just keeping your mind in that clear blue sky. Or like Scott was saying, the analogy of that lake. That's not real. That's not a part of me. That anger is not me. Okay, that frustration I was feeling today, not me. Okay, that's not a part of me. So we're going to be using some of these words because I'm talking about me, but we'll get into the ego and the selfless. You know, probably that's when we get to like the fifth night when we talk about emptiness. Right? We'll get there, I promise. Yes, sir.
So I have two questions. First, so with the reflection analogy.
Okay.
If we're reflecting the negative, would we also be reflecting the positive, and it's merely a reflection? So there really is, it's just a reflection. There's nothing. Like you said, there's nothing there. And it's the ability to reflect that's being passed on, and that's all. I do want to ask my other question as well.
Sure. So, you know, we use this analogy for a lot of things, and it does get a little confusing because we start talking about two or three different things. And so another... You know, to kind of maybe clarify the picture a little bit, and I'll try not to take up too much time because there's some other stuff you want to get into. So, you know, you imagine today, right? You look up at the sky and you see all these different, you know, kind of big thunderclouds and dark gray clouds, right? And then they all go away, and then tomorrow you wake up and you look up and there's these little white puffy clouds, you know, and then the next day there's more big heavy clouds. So every day there's this different set of clouds up there in the sky. But those clouds aren't actually part of the sky itself, right? They're just there. They develop. They grow in that sky, and then they go away. But the sky itself, that clear sky, is always there. These clouds are just things that come and arise and are there for a while, and then they dissipate. And then the next day, there's a whole different sky with a different set of clouds. And this is kind of how that analogy ties into our idea of rebirth or what the mind is. The mind, that very subtle level of consciousness, mind or consciousness itself, is like that sky that's there. And then what we experience as ourselves is just a certain day's clouds, right? What we say in Buddhism is that everything we are, our physical self, our mental activities, these are all things that come together because of causes and conditions. I have a body because of the whole, you know, mommy and daddy and little twinkle in their eye, and then there I have this human body. And these other levels of consciousness that I have, my thoughts, my memories, are also things that come together because of causes and conditions. So that's all this whole accumulation of all these factors, physical and mental factors, that I experience as Scott, is just like this collection of clouds that's there one day in the sky. And at my time of death, it's kind of like the end of that day, and all those clouds dissipate and go away. And then the next day, the next life, you have this whole new set of clouds there that have come together because of the conditions that day. Just like in the next life, you have this whole new set of mental and physical factors that are going to come together. But it's that, when we talk about the continuity of consciousness, it's like that, just that clear sky that's always there that continues. Enlightenment is, so what we have, those clouds in the sky, we have lots of different types of clouds, right? We've got virtuous clouds, positive clouds. Clouds, and this gets a little more to the technical definition of mental states, but what we say are that virtuous mental states result in happiness. So generosity is actually results, is the cause of happiness. Jealousy is the cause of suffering. And when your sky only has virtuous clouds in it, right, when your mind only has spontaneously only develops virtuous thoughts, and you've eliminated all the non-virtuous thoughts from your mind, then that is enlightenment. And what we say is, you know, and again, this gets into kind of mixing metaphors, but so we'll kind of get away from the cloud metaphor, but those non-virtuous states of mind, those non-virtuous thoughts and thought patterns actually obscure the mind from doing its job, from knowing. So that once you've cleared away all these non-virtuous states of mind and all that you have left are these positive virtuous states of mind, that the mind is actually able to function the way it's supposed to, the way it's capable of, fully capable of, so that you experience happiness, true happiness beyond anything, you know, we can imagine, unless you're already a Buddha, which I don't know. But also that you're able to, that your mind is able to know everything. You've cleared away any obscurations from knowing anything, which is why we say Buddhas are omniscient, because the job of the mind is to know, to cognize, to perceive. So once you've cleared away all these, it's kind of like, to get another analogy, like a dirty window. Once you've cleared all the dirt away from the window, then you can see perfectly clearly. So as a Buddha, once you've eliminated all these obscurations, you actually experience things as they actually exist, as they really are. Does that help? Do you have another question?
So is it the belief that other species as well have this same or something similar?
Yes. Okay. The Buddhist belief is that anything that bears a mind, any animal, any sentient being that has a mind has this potential, okay, whether it is an insect, whether it's an animal, whether it's human, whether it's a microorganism, anything that bears a mind, it's called semchen, mind bearer, they have that potential, they have that mind, they have that potential, okay? So Scott was touching on where we were going here, because it does all flow, okay? That, what I had up there before, those mind streams, okay, and then life, death. That's called samsara, okay, from a Buddhist point of view, cyclic existence. We're born, we live, we die. We're born again, we live, we die. And we live in that all that suffering. Again, the dukkha, let's use the word dukkha, because every time I hear suffering, all I think of is that awful, you know, we go to the deep end of the pool right away, okay? So cyclic existence is that beginningless, recurring cycle of death and rebirth under the control of karma and delusion. Now we're going to get into karma, okay? And again, these things are all tied together. There's a whole six-week course here at Kadampa Center that just focuses on karma. For an hour and a half, for 6 weeks, that's the big subject, okay? We're going to try to cover it in 20 minutes, all right, so again, we're just going to skim over the top. There are some phenomenal books out there that once, if you're interested in the subject and you want to learn more about it, this will take a long time, all right? But once you start to work with this and take this as a working hypothesis, you'll be really, I think, surprised and impressed at where you can take this, okay? So the definition of karma, okay, is action. Karma is action. All right. It is a working of cause and effect. Okay. Positive actions produce happiness. Negative actions produce suffering. That's it. It's that simple. And you have to think about this as a natural law. Okay. Do you know how? I can't even remember what I put next. Okay. This is good. Okay. So karma is a psychological process. There's not a cosmic scoreboard out there. Nobody's out there going, Sandy did this today, Sandy cut and went down the wrong way here tonight. Okay, there isn't a cosmic scoreboard going on here, all right? But virtuous actions will always produce happiness, and it will happen, okay? Negative actions will always produce suffering. I can't do something virtuous and have it turn out icky. That's not going to happen. That's a law. That's the natural law. Think about karma just like the law of gravity, okay? You know how if you fall off a ladder, you don't sit there and you know, whine and cry, and why is gravity punishing me? This isn't about punishment, and it's not about blame. Okay? It's not. So we got to get over that right away. That one's one of the big ones that I think, especially here in the West, we tend to do. We tend to assign blame, okay, and we tend to have somewhat of a victim mentality, and with the karma, that gives you your own personal responsibility. Okay? And then now remember, that beginningless, forever ago, eons, we've all been in existence for eons, beginningless time. That means we've all had the opportunity to do awful things. We've all been bad people. We've all been insects. We've all done all this stuff. We have all done this. Each and every one of us has. Okay? So when we see this, that karma is a really good explanation once you start to work with it to understand why bad things happen to good people. All right? It's not about blame. They didn't do anything awful, potentially, in this life to deserve this. But you know what? In all of our lives in the past, we've all done these things. But it's not about assigning blame. Okay? So let's kind of try to let go of that. Again, karma is a psychological process. There isn't a cosmic scoreboard. Positive, virtuous actions create positive results. Negative actions create negative results. There is a cause and effect for everything. All right? It's like planting a seed in the garden. Okay? So if I plant an oak and a little acorn, I'm not going to get a birch tree. Okay? So that's that. If you plant a positive seed in your mind stream, something good will happen. That's law. Okay? Think about it like the law of gravity. If this is something that the Buddha did not make this up. Okay? It's something he discovered. Okay, just like Sir Isaac Newton discovered the law of gravity. Okay, and then he taught it. He explained it to us. That's the same thing that the Buddha has done with the law of karma. All right? Now again, we're going to have 20 minutes, and we're probably down to 10. So we'll go over this. We'll do it again in the next class. But here are some of the laws, okay, the laws of karma. Let's just go over them briefly, and then we can discuss them a little bit. Okay, karma is definite. This is the law. Virtuous actions will lead to happiness. Non-virtuous actions will lead to suffering. All right? Karma expands over time. That little seed of that beautiful generosity that you gave, you know, a long time ago, that could result in just magnificent richness in your next life. Okay? But that mean thing you did back in the day, okay, to a little kid at school or something, that also can magnify. Okay, so karma expands. Just like that little acorn that plant becomes that great big oak tree, karma expands. There is no result without cause. Okay, you will never experience a karmic result from something that you didn't do. If I go and hit her, okay, you're not going to all of a sudden have any of the negative consequences of that. Okay, so you will never experience a result without you having created the cause. So this is all about individual, okay? Karma is not lost. You cannot, it will not go away. Actions will always, always, always produce a result, okay? It is not lost. You can purify karma, and you can also destroy good karma. So you can purify bad karma, but you can also destroy good karma, okay? So what they say is just one moment of anger. One moment of anger can destroy thousands of beautiful karmic seeds. Okay? So, but you can also purify. You can also purify some of the negative karma that you've created. Now, think about this, okay? I was going to go over something else. Oh, we'll get there. Okay. Four more aspects of karma. Again, I know I'm throwing a lot at you. We can talk about it. Any questions to this point? Okay. Okay.
It says, no result without cause. You'll never experience a result without your having created cause. So if you hit her, is that because she did something and that was the result of her cause?
Okay. Yes. Okay, the reason now there's, let's go through this. There is, what's a good way to put this? Conventional karma, okay, meaning I'm going to hit her. She's going to get pissed at me, isn't she? Okay, so that's conventional. That's, you know, there's that result, cause and result, just from this is what happens in the real world. Okay, I can't do something to her without her having some reaction to me. Okay, if she's really good, she would just step away. But if she's not, she could come back at me. That's conventional, cause and effect. Okay, but ultimate karma means I hit her. Okay, I'm going to carry a bad seed here. Now, I've got some negative karma going on. She had the karma to be on the receiving end of that hit. Okay, that meant she probably hit somebody in her past. Okay, she did something. Again, and this isn't to deserve it. Okay, this is not about assigning blame. Okay, and the way to let go of some of this stuff is the way that we try to use it is these bad things. Today, you know what, I had a rough day today. And the cable guy didn't come on time. I had all of this different stuff going on. And instead of me getting all frustrated, which I did for a smidge because I'm not a Buddha yet, okay, then it was like, you know what, I'm obviously purifying something. I'm obviously purifying some kind of anger or impatience that I had before because now I'm experiencing that. So now I use these as life lessons, okay, because I don't want to keep creating this cause to have this happen to me again. So it's about letting some of these things go. Okay, this is how we work with this stuff. And we'll talk about this a little bit more. So it's about working with them. It's not about assigning blame. It's not about seeing that poor puppy that's just been mistreated and say, oh, they must have deserved that because they did something in a previous life. Because we tend to blame Americans, you know, in our Western society. Well, they must have done something. So, but not in this life. So we still feel compassion. We still feel love and pain for these, you know, animals or creatures, people that are suffering, okay? But we just have to understand it from our point of view and to be able to let go of some of our potential victim mentality, okay? I'm a cancer survivor. You know, I didn't sit there and go, oh, why did this awful thing happen to me? You know, it's like, boy, I'm obviously getting through some of the stuff, using it as, you know, more of a positive. So now I don't have to, because once you've experienced that negative karma, you've purified it. Once you've experienced it, it's gone. I won't have to deal with that one again. There's going to be more stuff down the road because I'm not a Buddha. I'm not perfect. Okay, but it's starting to learn, use it as a working hypothesis of how I live my life. Help? Make sense? Yes.
So is meditation a way to purify certain karmas, or is it a way to just open your mind and help you work on doing a better job at doing that?
Both. How's that? Meditation, again, since this is all about your mind, you have to learn how to work with your mind, okay, how to control your mind, how to train your mind. Okay, Everybody drives a car here, right? Do I have any non-drivers? Okay, David, go with it. Do you remember that first time you got behind that wheel? The very first time? And it was like, scared to death, and I'm going to do that? Okay, and all of that fear that you had when you were going to try to do this? And now I bet y'all don't even think about it. You get in the car and you just drove here, and you were thinking about 52 million other things. Okay, that's mind training. You trained in how to drive a car. Will work with you. Okay? So that's mind training. And athletes, okay, that go and they basketball players, okay, they'll be practicing dribbling, the shooting and all that stuff, muscle memory, all of that thing, they practice. So meditation is practicing working with the mind. It's the same thing, becoming familiar with it. Once you learn how to work with your mind, because your mind is different than my mind, is different than her mind, you'll find the things that click with you all of a sudden, and all of a sudden that's going to work for you. So once you learn how to work with your mind, there are specific meditations that you can do that help to purify. There's meditation does not mean blissing out, not from a Buddhist point of view. Meditation from a Buddhist point of view is working with your mind, specific meditations that work with your mind. There are specific meditations for everything that you want to do. Okay, if you want to work with anger, if you want to work with compassion, if you want to work with purification, if you would pick a subject, there's a meditation out there for you. Okay, and it's working with your mind and becoming familiar with it. Okay, questions? You're just sitting back there just taking all this in, are you? Biting your lip. Okay. So karma is a psychological process. It's a natural law, just like gravity. Okay, it just is. All right. Here's the four laws of karma. Definite, it expands over time. No result without a cause. And it doesn't get lost. All right. Four more aspects. Okay. The ripening results of karma. What type of rebirth will you have? Okay, that's called the ripening result. The possessed result. What type of environment are you born into? Okay, we all were born as humans, okay, which is considered a very, very precious rebirth, okay, because we have the ability to work with our minds. Animals and insects don't, so precious human rebirth. But and we were also born here in the United States. Okay, we're not born in a war-torn country. We're not born in an environment that has, you know, no water and no food. So think about this. Okay, this is the possessed result. What type of environment are you born into? Experiencing the results similar to the cause. Okay, this karma is like, I was robbed, you know what, probably because I stole something in the past, in a past life. Okay, sometimes there isn't this direct connection, but you can think about it like that. Experiencing the result similar to the cause. You're robbed because you stole. Creating the result that is similar to the cause. Back into that. You steal because you stole. So it's creating the result that's similar to the cause. Again, these are four aspects of karma. I'm quickly running out of time. All these Buddhist concepts, karma, rebirth, all of these things we've been talking about, these bring us back into ethical behavior. How do we not do this? Okay, how do we only get this positive karma and get rid of the negative karma? This leads us into the 10 non-virtuous actions. Okay, the Buddhist, again, we're talking from a Buddhist point of view, these ethical behaviors and things that we can control. There are 10 non-virtues. Three of the body, four of the speech, and three of the mind. These are actions that we do with our body, speech, and mind. All of the actions with the body. Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. Speech, lying, harsh speech, divisive speech, gossip. With your mind, covetousness, jealousy. Okay, I want that. Anger, wrong view. Okay, so let's go. I bet y'all think, you know what, I don't kill. I don't have to worry about that one, do I? You know what, when's the last time you swatted a mosquito? You killed. Okay, you weren't even thinking about it. You drove and you hit a squirrel. You killed. You were stepping on ants on the way in here. You killed. Things we don't think about. We're doing it. We actually do it without even thinking about it when we're eating. Okay, even if you are a vegetarian. Okay, the chemicals used on the fields to save those carrots killed a lot of insects and things. So we do. We kill every day. We don't mean to. So it's not an on-purpose thing. It's not that vicious. There's different levels of karma. Okay, you go out and you kill somebody. That's going to be some pretty heavy karma. Okay, but you swatted that mosquito. It's still killing. Lighter karma, but it's still there. Okay, stealing. I bet we all say, I don't steal. Okay, how many people have ever even taken paper clips, paper from work? All right, things like that. Stealing, from a Buddhist point of view, is the definition is taking what has not been offered. So all of a sudden, oh, man, you know what? We do it all the time. And we don't think about it. It's taking, but now from a Buddhist, if you're going to start working with this stuff, we start thinking about it. I cut in the wrong way tonight on my way here. And I thought about it, and I'm looking, no car, and I've got so much to do. And I did it, and then I thought, boy, wrong karma kit. Because I'm aware. This is what mindfulness is all about. You start to become aware of everything that you do. Okay? And I do a lot of these things. Okay? So, sexual misconduct, you know, cheating on your spouse, that kind of thing. So they're pretty explicit about it. Speech, lying, okay? We all do the little white lies, okay? Sometimes we tell whoppers. if you start to become aware of this, you become more mindful. So what we're trying to do is raise awareness. Harsh speech, anger, being mean to somebody, angry speech. Okay? I could have really cut down on that Time Warner cable guy today. Okay? Divisive speech. Okay? That's negative when you're just trying to, even at work, we tend to do this. You know, make up to somebody over here because we're upset with somebody over there, or we don't want to get caught on something, so we'll try to put divisive speech. Gossip. We all do that. But the more we become aware of it, the more that we think about these karmic hits, okay, it's about being more mindful. Okay? The mind. Actions of the mind. It's the body, speech, and mind. All right? Who was it? Jimmy Carter? Did that whole Playboy thing back? I'm really dating myself, aren't I? Never mind. Okay. The mind, your actions of your mind, just by thinking them. Okay, because sometimes you think, well, I didn't actually do it, but you thought it. So there can be a negative karma or positive. We tend to talk a lot about the negative and not the positive. But the mind, that jealousy, that I want what they have. Instead of rejoicing, it's so awesome that they just won that lottery. We don't ever do that, do we? Man, I wish I had that. Okay? Anger. Even frustration is a level of anger. Okay? So you have to be aware of that. And wrong view. Okay? I know this karma. I believe in this. So I can't not. Okay? I can't decide later that this isn't going to. Or pretending that you don't get it. We all know. You know, the ethics. This is everywhere. It doesn't have to be Buddhist. It doesn't have to be Christian. It doesn't have to be... We know that these ethics are the right thing. I don't care what label you use. So it's just trying to follow these. I want to be a little careful with that one. Yes, if you know, it is a deeper hit, I believe.
I think the action itself, you know, and one thing to keep in mind about this is this isn't about, you know, what the Buddha said is this is just natural law, right? It's mm-hmm. cause and effect. So these non-virtuous actions create imprints in your mind that will cause suffering. So mm-hmm. if you... You know, you kill a cockroach. Anything that's intentional, that's what one, yep. one thing that's important to keep yep. in mind is anything that's intentional is a karmic action. Things that are done without it, you know, that you're not aware of doing don't necessarily leave karmic imprints or not as heavy of one. So there has to be some intention involved. So if you, by killing a cockroach, you're creating that habit. Another way of looking at karma is that it creates habits. That's one of those, the way that karma ripens. So you're creating a habit of killing. It's easier for you to kill. And that because we say karma expands, when it becomes easier for you to kill insects, then maybe later on down the road, it's easier for you to kill animals. The easier it gets for you to kill animals, maybe the easier it gets for you to later on to kill humans. So you are creating that, not just, you know, that there is this potential or this habit to continue doing the same actions that can expand. So that's one way to look at it.
Yeah, and intention is exactly, and there's, again, we're not going to be able to cover this. In the 6-week karma class, they will go into, there's 4 different levels of what you have to go through in order to get that karmic, you know, good or bad. So there's a lot we are totally skipping over here, okay? So there's much, much, much more to this than this. You can think about this too. You know how water dripping on that rock creates those grooves after all this time, okay? That's what we're doing, is creating these habits, okay? We're putting that groove in that rock. That's what we're putting, that groove in our mind stream. And we want to just have the positive, okay? We want those positive seeds planted. So every action that we do plants a seed. So you've got that garden in your mind, and you want to have that beautiful garden that doesn't have any weeds, that only has those beautiful plants. So we're putting those seeds in. Okay, so everything you do plants a seed. That's what they'll actually call that, a karmic seed. Okay, for good or for bad. And there's neutral too. Okay, so just waiving this action. That does nothing. All right, so there's positive, neutral, and negative. All right, I saw a bunch of hands, and we've only got about 5 minutes.
Well, I know that if I can all help it, I release insects instead of squishing it. It's being like spiders and things like that. You have a fear of spiders, so it's difficult, but I do catch it. I'll let it go or whatever. But I find that it kind of puts you in a different frame of mind when you do that. So maybe, perhaps, it won't be a gateway to killing higher and higher animals necessarily, but it might soften your heart a bit. And then if somebody comes to you and says something or does something that might be, before it might have been a little bit irritating, you have your heart is softened just a little bit so it doesn't irritate you as much or something like that. That seems to be, that's how it's helped me.
Yeah, it's that next drop.
Yeah.
You're just creating those new habits.
Yeah.
Okay? So if you take all of these things that we talked about, and I've got a question back here. Okay, all of these mind moments, okay? So don't worry about those 64 that is going to happen there because we're not going to get there tonight. Don't worry about those. But just think for tonight, okay? Just for tonight, before you go to bed, from now until you go to bed tonight, try to be more aware of everything that you're doing with your body and with your speech and your mind. Just for tonight, try it, okay? So tonight you want to be a kinder, gentler person. I know, you're laughing already. Okay, just for the next however many hours, and even if you can't do it, just do it once an hour. Stop and think, what am I doing with my mind? How has my mind been in this last hour? When you go to bed tonight, think about, how did my mind work for tonight? Okay, did I go home? Did you all of a sudden just turn the TV on and just bliss out and didn't think about anything? Did you get into an argument with your spouse or your roommate? Okay, can you just cut them some slack for tonight? Just think, tonight I'm going to do nothing but good. Just try it. Okay, yes, sir.
So in the grand scheme of things, is there a balance between good and bad karma?
Ask that a different way.
A different way?
Yeah.
So in this universe we exist in, there's good and bad karma and neutral, you say. Is there a grand balancing act going on to where the bad balances with the good, sort of yin and yang?
I don't think so, because we're not trying to balance the good and the bad. We want to get rid of the bad, okay? So each of us is trying to just work with our own mind and get rid of the bad in our mind. We cannot control anybody else, okay? And we don't, unless we're Buddhas, we don't have the wisdom to really help as much as we'd like to, but there is not a grand yin and yang and balance of good and bad. We want to get rid of the bad. We want it gone. And if you were a Buddha, okay, you want to help everybody get rid of the bad, not just yourself. Chris?
Well, yeah, I was just thinking about this. And we all have Buddha nature. Every sentient being has Buddha nature. That organism or that being can become enlightened. So that could happen, at which time there would be no bad.
That's the goal.
No, the bad karma is all gone because we've purified it, and we can only generate good karma because we're enlightened.
Yes, and that's the goal, to get rid of all of it. And this is going to lead us to what we're going to talk about next time, is this precious human rebirth, the Buddhist view of death, okay, the three scopes of Buddhism, and the three principal aspects of the path, which is renunciation, bodhicitta, and the wisdom of emptiness. We're going to get into this. What Chris is talking about there a little bit is bodhicitta, okay, that wish to become enlightened for the benefit of all sentient beings. Okay, that's really what we study here at Kadampa Center as a Mahayana tradition. That we don't want to just reach nirvana for ourselves, okay? We don't want to become enlightened just for ourselves. We want to become enlightened so that we can help all sentient beings. And then all negative would be gone. Okay, so there's not a balance. Now I was going to try to do one more meditation. We just don't have time. So thank you all for coming. Let's dedicate all of these positive efforts that we made, and I'm sorry for spinning your minds totally out, but this was a lot of positive effort. And y'all came to Kadampa Center in order to learn a little bit, to try to become a little bit wiser yourselves for the benefit of others. Just think about that ripple effect, like I said, just for tonight. Try it. Okay, so let's dedicate these efforts. Again, what we're doing with the dedication. Okay, we planted this karmic seed of all this good learning that we did. With the dedication, we are covering it to seal it, covering it with that dirt so that it can't get washed away. That's what a dedication does, okay? So we just dedicated these efforts, and we're going to try tonight and see what happens, okay? Y'all have a good night, drive safe, and thank you so much for coming. I'll stick around for a little bit afterwards for questions, but we'll try to cover them next time. Thank you.